Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
Welcome back to the dialogue with Dewa De Boer on Reality Check Radio, where we discuss politics, power, and culture. You can text us your thoughts on 2057 or email your questions and thoughts to inbox@realitycheck.radio. We are joined now by Sophia Tofbiro from the European Conservative, which is Europe's leading conservative English language publication on philosophy, politics, art, and contemporary affairs. In addition to their quarterly print magazine, the European Conservative publishes daily news stories and analyses, commentary, interviews, and reviews, as well as investigative reports. Well, good afternoon, Sophia, and welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. So as you made a perfect introduction of the European Conservative, we are, as you said, an online website and a quarterly magazine. We publish news, essays, commentary, analyses, and interviews. And our goal is to be a platform where Europeans and people outside of Europe go to if they want to read about the latest political maneuverings in different European countries and to see behind the curtains, so to speak. That is why we don't just write news regurgitating what the most dominant platforms are saying, but we rather analyze news. So if you go to our platform, europeanconservative.com, you'll see that for this specific reason, our news stories are much longer than usual. And 1.5 years ago, we opened our Brussels office. In Brussels, and even more so than in politics, the media is painfully dominated by the left. So it was obvious that our first physical office has to be in the heart of Europe, or as we call it, in the lion's den. And now we are the biggest conservative media in Brussels. What makes the European Conservative unique is that we don't only focus on politics, but also on culture, philosophy, beauty, and with all that, we take our small share in the efforts to preserve the Western civilization.
Well, thank you for that. That's quite the introduction. And I thought I'll have some follow-up questions, but you answered some of those as well. Like, I was really wondering how it is that you're placed in Brussels. Is the culture of Brussels at odds with conservatism, or is that just the impression that we get that Brussels is say, very left-wing, or is that just only the European Parliament part of it, the bureaucracy?
Well, yes. I mean, when it comes to Brussels, the Brussels bubble, it is incredibly left-wing. And so, but there are, of course, conservative forces within the bubble, also in the European Parliament. So when we opened our office, which I mentioned, this is the first physical office of a European Conservative, everybody was working remotely before that. They welcomed us with open arms, the conservative fellow or fellow conservatives, because there were no platforms to which they could give their statements on different issues. Politico, even conservatives, woke up with reading. The first thing they did in the morning was reading Politico to inform about like what happened in the past days or that morning. So having an office there, like of a conservative media outlet, I think it's a breath of fresh air to many people. So I think we did the right choice or made the right choice when we opened our office there.
Now, I understand with the recent European elections, the conservatives or more right-wing groups, the identitarian blocs as well, picked up some extra European MPs. Could you give us a little bit of an overview on how the European election went? Who were the winners and the losers of that election?
Yes. So it is clear that Europeans are fed up with open borders and the insecurity that comes with that. The victories of Marine Le Pen's National Rally, the Austrian Freedom Party, Hungary's Fidesz, and Giorgia Meloni's Fratelli d'Italia, among others, clearly shows this. Also, voters made it clear that they don't want policies that destroy the economy, the industry, the farmers, and would force them to buy expensive electric cars or eat bugs even. People don't want to hear more about the absurd net zero. And so the overwhelming vote against green parties across Europe has sent a powerful message. So all political groupings on the left lost seats compared to the 2019 election results, the biggest losers being the Greens and the Renew groups, who altogether lost 45 seats, if I'm not incorrect, at this year's election. It is also worth mentioning or noting that on the 9th of June, on election night, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen declared that center held, because the European People's Party EPP group got the highest number of seats in the parliament. Well, that might be true for the time being, but Europeans clearly want a change, and the number of non-attached members and newly elected members not yet allied to any of the political groups can quickly change this status quo with their 87 seats.
And how much power do the European MPs have? I've heard it say that the Parliament, the European Parliament, is not real in the sense that the bureaucrats run everything and the MPs are just there. They turn up and they don't really get to do anything.
Well, every policy that comes out of Brussels first has to go through the European Parliament. So it does matter who represents Europeans there. And also there's a not super self-evident connection between the Commission and the Parliament, because the new commissioners have to be approved by the members of the European Parliament. So, and the Commission is the most powerful force in European politics. So even though members of the European Parliament play a different role, their role is not insignificant at all.
And what kind of changes can we expect? What kind of changes are you expecting in Europe in the next term?
Well, yes, when it comes to the future of Europe, that's a different topic. We could talk about the future now. Well, the future of Europe will depend, in my opinion, on whether patriotic sovereigntist forces will be able to form strong alliances to counter the federalist agenda of the left and liberal forces. I recommend reading the Patriotic Manifesto, recently released by an alliance forged by Herbert Kickl. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. I apologize for that. The chairman of the Austrian Freedom Party, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, and former Czech PM Andrej Babiš, which clearly states that the way forward is a Europe of strong, proud, and independent nations, free in their determination to live and cooperate in concord with each other. Another key issue will be the economy and competitiveness. And I believe, not just because I'm a biased Hungarian, but objectively speaking, I believe the Hungarian government's strategy of connectivity is perhaps the recipe of success. So rather than viewing emerging global players as enemies, and I refer to China and Latin American countries, Europe should look for ways to cooperate that is mutually beneficial, but puts Europe's interests first. And I think Europe should stop shooting itself in the foot, so to speak, with net zero and carbon neutral ideas, that and counter climate change in a more sensible way. For example, promoting nuclear energy that has been proven to be the greenest energy source so far. And yet this is another fact that the left chose to be blind to when it comes to the greenness of nuclear energy. So the next couple of weeks and months will be very interesting, as I said, to see where the non-attached members and new MEPs will go to, which groupings, if they will choose to join any groupings at all, and whether this new patriotic movement will manage to forge a strong alliance with other parties.
I am glad to hear you say that Europe should look to Hungary. Actually, in New Zealand, we have a conservative conference on today at the moment, run by the Family First group called the Forum on the Family. And when I was there last year, the guest of honor was the Hungarian ambassador. So we have some connections here with conservatives in New Zealand and conservatives in Hungary. So it's great to have that connection.
I'm glad.
Now, one of the things that I heard about the election, European election, was a big swing from younger voters to the right wing, and that the trend or the expectation, you could say, has been from the Green Party, from the left, that people, the young people, will vote for the left, they'll vote for green policy. And when I was looking at some of the polls from, say, Germany especially, it looked like large numbers of young voters were going to the right instead of to the left. And is that true? And why is that happening?
It is true. I would start with a quote from Churchill, who said that if you are not a liberal when you are young, you have no heart. And if you are not a conservative when old, you have no brain. Well, that wisdom seems no longer to be true. The way I see it, many young people have lost faith in the left-wing and liberal partisan forces. They have seen the disastrous consequences of their policies and also the hypocrisy about climate change and the so-called rule of law. I refer to, for example, the corruption engulfing the left-wing liberal parties in the European Parliament, but also the fact that their countries are changing beyond recognition because of the uncontrolled mass immigration. So young people also see that the left-wing liberal parties are pushing ideological issues such as LGBTQ and culture war, rather than focusing on or tackling real problems like rising inflation and housing crisis. So they, young people, want their future to be theirs. And the current path the left is on promises no future. And they are starting to seeing it.
People here in New Zealand who sort of hear a bit about European politics, we often get it through, say, big names or big events that happen over in Europe. And there's a lot more that we hear from these identitarian groups. Like we've had several speakers come through New Zealand and Australia, Lawrence Southern, you've probably heard of, and many years ago now. And they were more so connected with these identitarians rather than just conservatives. Could you sort of explain, I guess, the difference in you? Like, is there a conflict between conservatives and these more populist identitarian groups? Like in many of these European countries as well, we see the vote share of conservative parties, like the traditional who are supposed to be conservative parties, collapse. And we see these more populist parties, winning larger numbers of seats because of that. What's driving that? Is it conservatism losing out, or is it just a change in what it means?
Well, we've been trying to determine how to call, let's say, conservative forces, because they're, the scale is quite large on the right. Should we call them populist movements? Should we call them conservative movements? Because, for example, what you see in the UK is the Conservative Party is everything but conservative when you look, exactly, take a close look at their policies. So we decided to call them sovereigntists, which doesn't cover all, but covers all, but at least gives you an idea of what kind of right-wing approach we're looking or the people looking to. So, I mean, in my opinion, when it comes to being conservative or being right-wing or being sovereigntist, it's commercial time. I apologize. But we've recently released our guide to the 2024 EU elections. And even though the elections already happened, it is worth reading because we deeply analyze the five big topics that have been dominating and will be dominating the political discussion for many years: the mass migration, immigration, Green Deal, security and defense, rule of law, and I forgot the fifth one because I might have amnesia. But if you look at those five issues and if you see what kind of approaches, let's say, sovereigntist forces are taking, I think that's the way forward, regardless of how we call them. So what we need is a united right. And if there are, let's say, populists or there are more conservatives or sovereigntists, they should join forces regardless of what we call them, because that's the only way we can tackle the globalist agenda. So I'm sad to see that in the European Parliament, for example, ECR is super divided when it comes to forming alliances, and one of the fraction dominating percentage of ECR is leaning towards the EPP. So I wish that conservatives or right-wingers, regardless of what we call them, join forces and stand strong against those forces who promises no future to Europe.
And just for an example for you from New Zealand, at the moment we have a coalition government that's basically liberals, conservatives, libertarians and nationalists, you know, in a right-wing government together. And it's working quite well for us at the moment, but it only worked because we had a really bad left-wing Labour government for a while. But definitely we can all work together if we put some of our differences aside and focus on, like you said, the key issues affecting our country, or in your case, you know, the whole continent. Especially the mass immigration comes up over and over again, I think, in these European countries. And that really is, you would say, the biggest issue is border security, illegal immigration. For years and years, millions and millions of people just coming into the country with no checks and no security at all.
Yes.
Now, we've recently had some elections in France. I think that only the first round of elections, with the second round happening end of the week. What are your thoughts on the results there?
So, first of all, the polls were not lying. They were quite right. Marine Le Pen's, just to give the readers some numbers. Currently, Marine Le Pen's National Rally and its allies come out on top in the first round of the French parliamentary elections. National Rally bagged 33% of the vote across the country, followed by the leftist Popular Front Alliance with 28% and Macron with 20.8%. But as Hélène Delazon, our Paris correspondent, stated in her recent analysis, it would be naive to underestimate the capacity of the current political system dominated by the left, because it will do everything to defend itself in order to survive and prevent Bardella's ascension. So it will not be easy. It will not be an easy win for the National Rally, as the two other electoral groups are coordinating their moves smartly, which might result in further political chaos. And speaking of chaos, in some French cities, Antifa and other leftist protesters set fires to express outrage at the results. In Paris, thousands of Islamists and leftists rallied against the so-called far right. And at those demonstrations, protesters waving the flag of Palestine, the flag of pride. But as our columnist Rod Dreher reminded, you could not see a single French tricolor there. However, at the National Rally's victory party on Sunday, French voters were waving the tricolor and singing the Marseillaise. So that image, I think, speaks for itself. And I mean, Macron's migration policy and the French's fear of further escalation of the Russian-Ukrainian war were, I think, the two most determining factors that drove the French to the right and abandoned the centrist establishment along with its liberal allies. So let's see what happens in the second round. But yes, it's going to be a close call for the conservatives, I think.
Yeah, do you think, and I'm looking at the numbers and we're half, you know, on the other side of the world, so it's hard to know for sure, but it looks sort of like everyone is ganging up on Marianne Le Pen to make sure she doesn't get a majority. Could you, I don't know if you could make a prediction. I mean, what happens if she does get a majority? What happens if her party doesn't get a majority? I say she, but it's the Bardella is would be the prime.
Yes.
And he's quite young as well. I believe only 28. And it's great to see more young people, you know, reaching these positions of prominence and trying to direct the future of their countries and of Europe.
Yes. So if Marine Le Pen's party doesn't get an absolute majority, I think Bardella already said that he is ready to cohabitating with Macron, meaning that, and that would be a very interesting situation, having a centrist president, meaning Macron, and a conservative prime minister, meaning Bardella. So I'm not sure what kind of situation that would result in, but it will be certainly interesting to see how the number or the battle for France unfolds.
And then the last question there, circling back to the future of Europe, do you see this as just, is this just going to be a one-off act of, say, rebellion against the establishment, trying to control borders, trying to stop war from escalating on the borders of Europe? And, you know, you've got these young people getting behind these movements. Is this something that you see on the ground as something that might fade away, something that might be betrayed, something that might be contained? Or do you see this as the future? Do you have a lot of hope for the future now?
I do have a lot of hope for the future. And as I said, everywhere I look, I see that people wanting change. And this is not the kind of will that would just fade away from one moment to another. If I'm looking at Europe only, the past 5 years before this election had disastrous consequences. And people are feeling it on their skin. I mean, this is like the idea that European politics or politics don't have direct impact on the life of everyday Europeans. That's a lie. Everything that comes out of Brussels or happens on a national level has direct or indirect effects on our everyday lives. And people are seeing it. The most recent and most accurate example, I think, the recent farmers' protests. I'm not sure if I can make a politically incorrect joke, but I heard someone say that veganism and communism are fine unless you love food. And if you take veganism out of the equation and put net zero or the Green Deal in there, you get the same result. So people are putting those, like, connecting the dots that they weren't be able to connect before, because politicians are making politics and policies opaque, so they feel distant, but they are not. They have direct consequences. So, and people, as I said, people realize that and they clearly want to change. So I don't think that this so-called rebellion would just disappear from one day to another.
That's a good way of sort of putting it. Yeah, you can have net zero or you can have food. You can have open borders or you can have a country, but you can never have both of those things at the same time.
Exactly.
And is there any final thought that you'd like to leave the listeners with and perhaps remind them of where they can follow your work and the work of the European Conservative? And to the listeners, we will be back right after the break as well. And we've been talking with Sophia Toff-Biro, and I will give you the last word.
Thank you so much for having me. And yes, please do follow us on our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Getter, and we will soon launch our Instagram page. And I would promote my own monthly news show, TCTV Inside Brussels. The next episode will be released on the 24th of July. So please take a look at it, and I hope you'll enjoy it.
And to anyone listening to the playback later, we will have all of these links on the website with the recording. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to, dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.